Welcome back to the Veterinary Viewfinder. This week, it's all about cats! Thanks again for tuning in to the Veterinary Viewfinder, the podcast that tackles the toughest topics in veterinary medicine. This week, we go to the feline side of medicine. We are so proud to introduce you to one of my favorite people on the planet. That is Dr. Susan Little. And we'll tell you more about her in just a second. But Becky, where are you?
Hey, Dr. Ernie. I am actually in Kansas City in a kind of precarious spot here in the bathroom of a service dog relief area in an effort to get some good sound quality. And because at the end of the day, I was not missing this episode. It is so awesome to have Dr. Little here.
Yeah, you're not joking, but wait, you're at an airport service dog potty area. Is
that
right?
You know it. And if you follow me on Instagram, you will see the recording picture weekly as usual. And there is no kidding, a relief fire hydrant behind me.
Wow, that is total dedication. Well, unfortunately, Dr. Cindy Courtney can't be with us this week. It just sort of didn't work out with her schedule. New baby, job, yada, yada, yada. We're going to miss you, Cindy. And I know that you were really upset that you couldn't talk to our guest today, who is Dr. Susan Little from Canada. Now, you know her because she has literally written the book on feline medicine. In fact, a book that I refer to daily is called The Cat, Clinical Medicine and Management. If you don't have that book, you need to get it. She also just recently, in the past, year and a half or so, came out with another book on consultations in feline internal medicine. Again, if you do not have it, you must go get it today. She has been the board member. She's past president of the Wynn Feline Foundation. She's on the American Association of Feline Practitioners, the greatest group in the planet to me. She owns a couple of specialty clinics up in Ottawa. She's a Guelph OVC grad. What more can I say? Thank you and welcome to the Veterinary Viewfinder, Dr. Little.
Well, thank you very much. Gosh, I feel like I'm sitting in a really boring place compared to Becky. I need a fire hydrant or something.
we can't all be Becky.
That's right. You know, but sadly, cats don't tend to go for the fire hydrant. Now, Susan, before we get started, please just tell everybody where are you right now?
Well, I am actually in Ottawa in my office right now, which is a little bit unusual because this is the time of year when my travel schedule is pretty heavy. So I'm headed off to Europe in a day or two, but you did actually catch me in Ottawa.
Wow. I know. And I'll tell you, Susan, if people are not following her on Twitter and Instagram, Cat Vet Susan, you need to check it out today because she travels the world. Where have you just come back from? You were just somewhere. Pretty exciting.
Yeah. Well, I just came back from Mexico. So did some lectures there. Got caught up in the earthquake.
Yep.
Yeah, in the airport.
8.1.
I know.
8.1.
Believe me, I felt it. Got evacuated from the airport, but eventually made it back to Canada. So
yeah, so guys, check her out on socials because she was detailing that trip, a massive earthquake. She was in the middle of it. But let's dial it back before the earthquake. Susan, tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got into veterinary medicine to begin with. Why did you become a vet?
Gosh, you know, it's always interesting to try to answer that question because, of course, many of us veterinarians get asked that all the time. And it's just been in my mind and I guess in my worldview for so long that I actually don't remember a day when I said I'm going to be a veterinarian. So I did my first degree, a biology degree. So right from the beginning, you know, I wanted to work with animals, very interested in nature, interested in biology. And it just, honestly, it just flowed from there. I don't think I ever really had to think about it.
Yeah, I know, Susan. I feel the same way. You know, I was born for this job. I mean, I feel really fortunate in that respect because, like you, we didn't really struggle with our career choice. It just sort of was, and that's just how it is. But you took a twist. You went in a direction that very few people did at a certain time. So tell us a little bit about how you got into feline exclusive practice.
You know, that is slightly more interesting, if only because I really didn't grow up with cats in the home. Actually, our home rarely had a pet. I did have a dog for a while as a teenager, but I didn't really come from a big pet owning or pet loving background. But once I got into vet school, you know, and got involved in veterinary medicine. And one of the first pets that I got for myself when I moved away from home was a cat. And I just quickly realized that I got cats. You know, I could read them better, right? I just understood them better. I have two dogs in my house, which I love dearly. But to this day, dogs remain a little bit of a mystery to me, despite having had dogs, you know, up and on all my life. I just seem to gravitate to cats. And I think a lot of us in veterinary medicine get that feeling, don't we?
Right. But go back in time. I mean, let's just face the facts. This was a canine-dominated small animal field, and suddenly you take a hard left turn and say, nope, I only want to see cats. How did you execute and transact that shift? That was monumental.
Well, I was really fortunate because feline medicine didn't really become a thing until the early 1980s. And I'm a late 80s graduate from veterinary school. And my first job was in what I like to call mixed practice, dog and cat. I was looking for an opportunity to do mainly feline medicine. And I came across, I didn't live in Ottawa, but I came across a job posting for the one cat hospital in Ottawa at that time, Dr. Doug Beck, who is my partner to this day. Doug really is the pioneer, not me, because he started not one but two, and remaining the only two cat-only hospitals in Eastern Ontario. And Doug gave me a chance. Doug took me on, and boy, we just never looked back. The two of us have been partners ever since.
Wow, you know, Susan, that's something I didn't know. And I've known you for 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that Doug actually predated you in the feline practice.
Yes, I like to remind him he's older than me. Yes.
So tell me a little bit about what your support staff looked like back then. I know as a veterinary technician myself, sometimes when I see a cat only practice, I think, who is crazy enough to spend all day every day with cats? But I know they're out there, and I love that this aspect is available, guys, to be able to build this side of the industry and to help get cats better practice. So tell me a little bit about what it looked like coming into a new practice and learning what it looked like to work with cats all day, every day, and how the support staff helped get you there.
Well, certainly in the beginning for us, it was not easy to find even veterinary technicians, you know, people who had taken a course or gone to school. So, you know, we're talking a long time ago, and we really had to train everybody from the start, right? We had to really start from the ground up and work with people. And then gradually, sort of over the years, it became easier and easier to hire veterinary technicians. And, you know, honestly, we have had a couple of veterinary technicians that have been with us what seems like, I'm sure in their mind, forever. But they are so skilled. So I did a little video the other day on veterinary technicians and talked a lot about how great, especially two of my technicians are that I work with all the time, and how I couldn't do really anything. They are the lifeblood of my clinic. So I've been really fortunate. And I think this is really key to the success of a cat-only practice. You have to attract people who love cats, not just love cats, but know or can develop the skills. It's a really different skill set.
Well, you know, Susan, you bring up a really good point there, and one I want to build on from Becky. Becky was talking about, wow, back then it was difficult to get staff, which to this day it still is, arguably. Mm-hmm. But what about the clientele? I mean, you know, one of the big knocks, you and I graduated pretty close in time, and back in that day, everybody was afraid of feline only because it would only be the crazy cat people. You know, so what did the clientele look like back there in the 90s?
You know, it looks a lot like it does today. And you have to embrace the crazy. they are wonderful clients. That's the reason they own cats. They're passionate. Cat people are different from dog people. You know, I actually do a little bit of a lecture on that about how you need to adjust your thinking and your communication a little bit for pure cat owners versus pure dog owners. So I think you just have to learn, excuse me, to recognize what communication needs they require. And I think you have to embrace that passion. That's why we're all here after all.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing I want to make sure the listeners understand is that this is a demand. I mean, there are people that absolutely want and desire and seek out feline-only, you know, practices. And Susan, you know, you and I have talked about this before, you know, person to person, but maybe share a little bit about what some of the reasons that people want to go to a feline-only clinic, or why they would seek out people like you, not just specialty, but just a place that's only for cats.
So our clientele does come from a wide geographic area. People will travel a distance to go to a feline-only only practice. And there's a whole variety of reasons. It could be, you know, some of our clientele are pure cat people. They don't have dogs. They're not interested in dogs. And so in their mind, they really want their cat to go to an environment where there are no other dogs. Maybe they had a bad experience. Their cat got scared, you know, at a veterinary clinic, maybe by a dog in the waiting room. So we have people who very much want that cat-only experience. And then we certainly get many owners, of course, have cats and dogs, but maybe through past experience, they've come to realize that a cat-only clinic often is more tailored to the needs of their cat. We can employ different handling techniques. Often we have, of course, we have medicine that is focused on one species, so that allows us, or hopefully allows us, to do a better job with one species. You know, honestly, people like you, Ernie, that work with cats and dogs, I don't know how you do it. I can barely keep one species in my head, for gosh sakes.
Yeah, and I love that you kind of brought up that point. I can remember the first time out of tech school, being at a CE lecture and hearing the statement, cats are not small dogs, and thinking, like, what an amazing thing to say, because a lot of times in school, we really don't learn how completely different feline medicine can be from canine medicine. So I understand you joined your practice in the late 80s. And tell me some of what you guys have done to progress and make it even better, because it sounds like you guys are leaders in the industry. But what I know is over the last 10 years, you know, the cat handling and the cat treatment mentality has really expanded. So how have you guys helped to influence that? Or what are some things you're doing at your practice that make it that much better for cats?
Do you know, honestly, those of us who started our cat practices or joined cat practices in the 1980s, we didn't have the wealth of resources. Now, you can go online and Google now and pretty quickly find videos, find good articles, find good images on how to appropriately handle cats. We had none of that. I mean, we couldn't even go online, for gosh sakes. It's kind of scary to remember those days, isn't it? So we honestly were self-taught. We just figured it out by trial and error. And it's always become amusing to me, you know, over the years as feline-friendly handling developed, those of us who have done this for a long time, now all of a sudden we see articles talking about things that are now standards for feline-friendly handling. And we look at it and we go, well, we just had to learn that ourselves. You know, we figured that out ourselves. So I think that's where having a good instinct for cats and cat behavior is really important. And, you know, I did some talks just yesterday at some veterinary clinics in Montreal, and I was trying to explain to the staff at that clinic that really what you're after when a cat comes into your veterinary practice is, instead of asking the cat to adapt to the conditions or the environment in your clinic, you are going to adapt to the cat. So it's a different mindset. Most of us ask the pet coming in the door to adapt to the way we do things, the way we have things set up, what our workflow is. And when you're working with cats, you have to flip that on its head and you have to say, how can I adapt to my feline patients?
Right. But you took it even a step further. And, you know, you helped found the Association for Feline Practitioners. You did the Cat Friendly Practice, which I think my clinic may have been the first in North Carolina or the Southeast. Mm. I mean, I love the fact that you actually took it in a formulaic, you know, systematic fashion. You created these organizations. So how did that passion develop? I mean, you know, because a lot of people love cats, a lot of people love horses or dogs or whatever, but they don't go and write textbooks and found, you know, organizations. How did you get into this next level, you know, outside of the clinic influence?
Now, I really have to respect and kudos to my colleagues. So I've been involved with the American Association of Feline Practitioners for a long time, very proud of the work they do, very proud that I still serve on the board. And one of our amazing programs is Cat Friendly Practice. And that is something that I supported as my time as president and still do on the board. But that is the brainchild of some amazing people like Dr. Ilona Rodan and Dr. Right. Elizabeth Collarin. And they really kind of clarified all of the bits and pieces of what a cat-friendly environment would look like and have put together, I mean, as you know, because your practice has gone through this process, have put together an amazing program where we all learn more about cats and we all learn to do better with cats. So I've really just been able to ride on the coattails of people who have been, you know, much bigger pioneers in the business than me. When it comes to the textbooks, I just, you know, I'm a bit of a geek like that. I mean, I love science. I love journal articles. I'm a bit of an editorial geek. You know, I can barely read a text message without correcting punctuation. So I was approached by my publisher, who is Elsevier, a number of years ago. I think because they couldn't get anybody else to do it, to be honest. I know I was not their first choice, but it turned out to be a happy marriage for both of us. And and I just discovered that I really love that process. And you know, the best thing about doing textbooks is you get to work with some amazing people who are 10 times smarter than me. And really, for me, it's a learning process. I learn so much. It's just amazing.
Well, I will tell you, listeners, you have just heard the most humble person on the planet, because Dr. Little has truly been a trailblazer and pioneer in feline medicine. So, again, thank you for all that you've done, and you've certainly influenced me and thousands of other people like me.
Oh, that's very sweet.
I totally agree with that. I love the idea that we are making better lives for our pets, no matter what species they are. And I hate to put this on you, Dr. Little, but can you tell me your top three favorite things that have come about in the last few years that make life better for feline practices and for feline patients most recently?
You know, I think that certainly this approach to having a cat-friendly practice program has to be number one. Just the fact that all of those learnings that all of us sort of, you know, older feline practitioners developed have gotten codified, if you will, have gotten assembled into a more formal structure and have gotten packaged into a program that we can use. To me, that has to be number one. It's just amazing to see that happen, and well past time. So that easily is number one in my book. And I think number two is the explosion of feline continuing education. So, you know this, Ernie, back in the day, we would go to a conference and you were lucky if you could find a couple of cat lectures, even at a major veterinary conference. And now there's entire streams. Of course, we have our own AAFP feline-only conference. Even some other organizations do feline-only meetings. So that explosion in feline continuing education. And I have to tell you, number three for me, I'm going to tip my hat to our partners, our veterinary companies, so our industry partners, who have really seen the need for whether it's more diets to treat more diseases on the nutrition side, or whether it's the move to really being thoughtful about what a feline-friendly drug formulation looks like. Because no matter how good a drug is, you know, Ernie, if we can't, and Becky, if we can't get it into a cat, it doesn't matter how good the drug is.
Right.
And so I now see companies being very thoughtful about, you know, about taste, about size of pills, about alternate routes of administration. And that's something that we never had years ago. We really had to struggle through a lot of drug formulations that were really tough to get into cats. So those would easily be my top three.
Wow, that's a great top three, and that's a tough question. But I would also like to switch a little bit over to, how have you kept balance in your life? I mean, you and I have had these conversations, but a lot of our listeners struggle. You know, they're stressed out. They don't feel complete or find meaning in their work. I mean, you obviously have been very happy and successful. What are some bits of advice you might share with our listeners about, you know, just keeping it all together and finding meaning?
Gosh, it is tough, and my heart goes out to, you know, younger practitioners today who have so many stressors and pressures on them, including financial ones. So I was a little bit lucky in that, being a Canadian practitioner, our tuition costs are not as high as in the U.S., and most of us don't graduate with this financial burden. But we do, of course, have the same other on-the-job burdens of pressures from clients, clients' financial pressures, you know, inability to help animals. And I think it took a long time to develop this, but I did learn to put things in a box learn when you can do as much as you can and when you can't, and try to accept that you can't cure the world. Learn to dwell on your successes, but also learn to be able to walk away, at least, you know, emotionally or psychologically, when you've done all you can, but there is no more that can be done. So that was a really valuable thing for me to learn, that it isn't always my responsibility. Usually the responsibility for a pet's healthcare sits on many shoulders, and it's not just mine. And so I see a lot of younger veterinarians really taking it all on their own shoulders. Right. So learning that ability to say, you know, I've done the best I can within the circumstances, and that's okay. So, yeah. You know, there's a phrase that I love to say, and that is, perfect is the enemy of good.
Right.
So, and we like to be perfectionists, right? So we like to do everything right for every pet every time. But in reality, that's rare. And so we have to learn to accept good enough a lot of times in our day. So just that acceptance, learning to accept there is a limit to what you can do. And then, of course, trying to have good interest. So I love, like you, Ernie, I love doing physical things. So I'm a runner, only like a 3 to 5K runner. But if I can't run regularly, I am not mentally well. Right, so you do have to find, right? You do have to find that thing. And for me, it's things that are physical instead of mental. So I spend all, well, because I work part-time in the clinic now and do a lot of work in front of a computer, you know, making lectures and doing podcasts or, right. You know, or working on textbooks. So a lot of my time is at home in my office, and that makes it harder actually to make a barrier between work time and leisure time. So developing an interest in things that are completely unrelated. And for me, it's physical things. I love to work in my garden, you know, because I like to dig holes and build walls and move trees. Right. You know, I want to do, it's a different part of your brain. So that's, I think, a good piece of advice is find your passion that uses a completely different part of your brain. Could be creative, could be physical, could be exercise, you know, whatever it is. And there's something really healing and really supportive of your mental wellness to use another part of your brain regularly.
Absolutely. Yeah. Great, great point. And the other thing too, I'd just like to, before we leave you today, I'd like to just talk a little bit about, you know, when we look at feline medicine and as it progresses, what really do you think has been the driver? I mean, both from our profession's viewpoint as well as the pet owner. I mean, what's driving this? I mean, cats are the hottest thing on the planet right now. They're the most popular pet, you know, in the Western world, in North America. I mean, what do you think is influencing that?
They are the most popular pet, you know, certainly in the Western world and in a lot of European countries. The internet sure helps, doesn't it?
Right.
You can hardly, you can't go online without tripping over a cat somewhere these days. I think, you know, in many ways that's a good thing. But I think that slowly we've been helping pet owners understand that the cat is not your low maintenance pet. So I think we have this dichotomy, right, that the cats are the most popular pet in Canada and the U.S., yet they receive the least medical care, certainly compared to dogs. And there are a lot of reasons why that is so. There are many barriers to medical care for cats. But one is just our attitude about the cat as that accidentally acquired, right? Very, very few people deliberately acquire a cat. You get a cat by accident. And then that whole mindset that they are really an independent creature. So slowly we're changing that, and we're seeing people who now have understood how much cats benefit from preventive care. So I think that's a good part of it. You have to not just be a popular pet, because apparently that was easy. Cats took over the world like overnight one night while we were sleeping. We didn't even notice, right? So that part apparently was easy for cats. The hard part is the educational component, so that owners understand who actually is living in their home. And I think slowly we're doing a better job with that.
Yeah, and you know, and there's all these other factors influencing it, you know, the urbanization, people living in apartments, smaller and smaller dwelling spaces, and cats are a great fit. I mean, obviously, you know, we would love to be able to have these large expansive places for cats, but you know, in an apartment dwelling environment, cats can do well as long as we provide enough environmental enrichment. And that's why, you know, if you're listening today and you're not involved with AAFP and Cat Friendly and what Dr. Little and others are trying to do, you really need to tune in, because they are giving us really good scientific sound advice on how we can enrich those environments. Because, Susan, you know, one of the things that really breaks my heart is a lot of times people neglect the social and emotional behavioral aspect of pet ownership, and cats in particular. So any quick little tips for those technicians and doctors out there that are struggling with that aspect?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because we have this mindset that the indoor environment is the best environment for cats. It's safest. That's usually what's top of people's minds. But, you know, I will tell you that the indoor environment is, yes, safe from getting hit by a car or, you know, getting attacked by another animal or getting lost. But it's not safe from stress and from boredom. Right. And we now increasingly understand the connection between those chronic daily stressors driving chronic health problems in cats. And so that, again, I think you're right. AFP has been a leader there in explaining what we call the environmental needs of cats. And we do have a wonderful set of guidelines that are available free to everyone, even if you're not an AFP member, at catvets.com. It's a great place to start to help you understand what those environmental needs are and how do you talk to clients about it. So that is has been a paradigm shift in my approach to feline medicine over the years. Most diseases have some environmental component, and we have to address that. And that's something I never would have been thinking of, you know, even 15 years ago.
And if you had to give just one piece of advice to a technician or a veterinarian listening today who is thinking, like, I know we could do better, and I would really love to learn more about having a better practice and a better technique for cats, what do you think is the best resource for them to go to? I'm saying your book, but you tell me, what's the best resource for them to go and to learn a better way of doing this as quick as possible to start implementing in their practice?
I think the two greatest resources that are available for free, one, of course, is our catvets.com, American Association of Feline Practitioners website. One of the things I love about AFP is that we make all of our practice guidelines available for free, whether you're a member or not. So that's great. And in Canada, we have a group called Cat Healthy at cathealthy.ca. Also, downloadable guidelines on preventive health care. So how do you structure preventive health care within your practice? So we've divided that whole big topic into modules like vaccinations, like, you know, behavior counseling, nutritional counseling, and clinics are using it for team training. They're using it to develop protocols for things like vaccinations or weight management programs. So the beautiful thing about the current day and age is that we have so many free resources. So those are always my top two, catvets.com and cathealthy.ca.
Wow. Well, I am so grateful that many years ago you decided to focus on felines, because you have changed the world, Susan. You have so influenced people to do the right thing for those other four-legged family members that really were being neglected. So, Susan, on behalf of not only the Veterinary Viewfinder podcast, but the entire veterinary profession, thank you.
Oh, gosh, you're so nice. I'm just going to go back to my cup of coffee after this, you know.
Well, guys, please check out her website. It's drsusanlittle.net.
Right.
Follow her on social media, Cat Vet Susan. I mean, her adventures are amazing, but more importantly, she inspires us. And so, you know, today when you go through your busy practice life and, you know, the next time that feline kitten comes in a little bit stressed out or nervous, just think back to pioneers like Dr. Susan Little, because her entire career has been dedicated to helping that situation be just a little more comfortable for everybody. So again, on behalf of all of us, thank you so much.
Thanks, Ernie.
Well, you've heard what we have to say. Now we want to hear from you. Please check us out. Join the conversation on Facebook at Veterinary Viewfinder, and join us on Twitter at Vet Viewfinder. Tell us what you think about cats. Why do cats rule and dogs drool? Or is it the other way around? How can we be better for our feline patients?
And don't forget to click to subscribe right meow so you don't miss another great episode of the Veterinary Viewfinder.
Until next week, bye.
Bye.
Meow.
Could have been a fire asleep for a while. It's a pervious thing. It's the perfect dream.